Item 2.01, do we have a consensus on the order of business? Looks like everybody's good with that. Let's move on to item 2.02, approval of minutes for the meeting of 2:27. Would someone like to make a motion for that? Moved by, it's Mr. Quisenberry and seconded by Mr. Buckman. Is there any discussion about the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Let's move on to item number 2.03, approval of minutes for meeting of 3:13.
I'll second.
It's been moved by Mrs. Sheffer and seconded by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Any discussion on that? Seeing none, I'll bring it back. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? We have one abstention. Motion carries 6-0 with one abstention. Let's move on to item number 2.04, approval of minutes of March 19th. Oops. Okay. Do we have a motion for that one?
I'll move approval of the March 19th
minutes. Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Quisenberry, seconded by Mr. Millar. Any discussion?
Mr. Hogan?
Yes.
I believe I may have voted in the affirmative on a meeting
okay.
that I was at.
Okay. So do we need to...
Okay, so we're going to mark Mrs. Roger abstaining.
I think we
on
can mark Mrs. Roger abstain
and Mr. Buckman,
for...
I,
was that three? I think
Mr.
it was 3:13,
Buckman abstains
right?
this time. Okay.
Okay. So let's... We're going to change that vote. We have actually...
Mrs. Holmes
took care of it. Good. I just want to make sure we put that out in the public. So we have a motion. Who made the motion for... Mr. Quisenberry, you made the motion for 3:19, did you not?
Yes, I believe I did.
And Mr. Millar seconded it? Okay, good. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Right? Is that right? 6-0 with one abstention. There we go. I've finally got it together. Let's move. Let's move on to item number 3.01, student representatives to the board. Who's going to go first?
The home team.
Ritik. Okay.
I'm going to pull up my notes real quick.
Okay. Sure.
All right. Good evening, everyone. Hope everyone is doing well. So today, Morro Bay and Slo High had the just one job fair at Slo High. I believe it was held at Morro Bay last year. I helped set up some of the booths that were there, and this was an opportunity for students from 9th through 12th grade to interview for some job positions. I think, I'm not sure exactly how the process went, but they put down some of their interests into an application, and then they were assigned interview slots with organizations from the library to political campaigns to construction firms to tractor firms as well. So that was really cool seeing all these organizations come on campus and have all these interviews. I really hope that some of the students who interviewed get jobs and continue to develop those relationships. So that was fun. And more, students from Morro Bay also attended. So that was from 9 to 11 a.m. this morning. And then tomorrow, we are having a Sit With Us lunch or Mix It Up lunch run by our Reach Club. I've talked about the Reach Club previously. They ran the National Kindness Month last month of March. But tomorrow, they've gone to every club on campus and asked students to sign up for this lunch tomorrow, where they're going to take students from each club and mix them together, trying to find really diverse groups. And we have assigned seating at this lunch. And we're going to try, I think they're... hope is to create a more diverse, introduce students to more diverse people. I guess this kind of falls the inclusivity thing where students who may not have as many friends but are in clubs and haven't been able to reach outside of their club's niche, I guess, are able to introduce themselves to other people. So an ASB student may sit with a robotics student who may sit next to someone from FFA. So that's what Reach Club hopes to accomplish. Something I want to say is Reach Club doesn't really have as many ASB members, which I find really cool because it's a different branch of students who are so committed to making our campus more inclusive. And it's not just students in ASB. It's a large group of juniors who are so motivated and involved in their campus and creating this wellness type of thing, and they've done an amazing job, and my hats are off to Mrs. Sawyer, who's done a great job at advising that club. So, that's really cool of them. We also have a fifth period leadership class this trimester, which I was enrolled in for the first week, and something that I wanted to comment on, which isn't really related to a report whatsoever, but on the first day of the trimester, Mr. Johnson makes all of the students raise their hands. He asks the question, raise your hand if you wanted to be here. And none of those 35 students raised their hands, and granted, I didn't want to be in that class either because I have leadership for two periods a day. The only reason I was in there was because there was nowhere else for me to go because of our school our schedules were all closed or whatever. But a couple weeks later, and yesterday, they've started to put on lunchtime activities and play music on Tuesdays and Thursdays in the quad. And it's been really cool to see. I was talking about it with Mr. Johnson, but these people who didn't want to be there at the first day of the trimester have even taken some steps to become leaders. And I guess they're forced leaders, but it's been really cool seeing them take that step and become a figure on campus. Students who you'd never expect to see running a lunchtime activity or being a prominent figure on campus have become in the public eye. And they, even though they've been thrust into it, they've kind of taken charge and done an amazing job. They had a musical chair lunchtime activity today, which had probably the most participants we've seen this entire year. So that was really cool to see them running that. And I hope to see them develop even more. And then today, NAG, our volleyball team, our boys volleyball team, is playing Oreo Grande, of course. And while it may not be for the league title, this game basically determines who wins the league title further down the road because AG and SLO are so contentious with their volleyball, I guess, and there's no real other third-place competitor. We can, as college decisions continue to roll out and third trimester carries on, we hope to have more fun activities for everyone at our school. And yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, I'm from Morro Bay. I've got some notes here from our president. Si Se Puede is an inspirational conference for Latino and Latina high school students in San Luis Obispo County. It was held at Cuesta College today. This conference was about empowering and motivating students to pursue higher education, encourage them to overcome barriers, understand that they can achieve their goals, and expose students to a myriad of educational and career paths. Aquatic Center news. On Wednesday, March 28th, the Morro Bay High School Aquatic Center will host an NCAA Division I women's water polo game between Cal Berkeley and San Diego State. MBHS Avid students enjoyed this year's college trip where they visited UC Santa Cruz, UC Berkeley, Sacramento State, UC Davis, and Stanislaus State. This was a great trip where students were able to see the college life and these different campuses through the eyes of many of our MBHS alumni. And for the rest of these, I'm going to hand it off to Zoe.
All right, so our psychology class took some well-deserved time for themselves during a yoga and sound bath class with Tim Costa. I remember the last meeting I was here, I think I was talking about the videos that they were doing on stress relief and how to motivate students to work harder. So this was a part of their unit, and all the kids were really enjoying taking that time because the semester's been so busy. So they did that, and then one of our sophomores, Tyler Collins, was awarded first place in the pole vault last Saturday at the Maurice Green Invitational at Oaks Christian in Thousand Oaks. And last week, I don't know if you guys attended, but our MBHS theater put on the Little Shop of Horrors, and it was like the best turnout I think that they've ever had ever at Morro Bay High School. So I went, and it was a great show. They had to fill out, they packed the cafeteria. They had to get more chairs, and people were sitting on the floor. So I was really proud to see our theater program blossoming. It's my last year, so it was nice going for once, and I wish I would have gone more in the past. And then on Wednesday, March 28th, the Morro Bay High School Aquatic Center, All right, and then for ASB news, we're holding our annual March Madness tournament this week. with 14 teams playing throughout the week. So they play by our gym, off to the side, half-court basketball, three-on-three, and it's a lot of fun to watch kids participating. It's always one of those things that kids like to do instead of, like, lunchtime activities. All the kids come and sit. We moved all the tables, so they actually had to sit where we were playing the basketball. And then on Friday, an alumni band will come to play in the quad to showcase their music. They're kids that have been in band past years, so we're excited to host them. Thank you.
That's great. Well, thank you very much. As always, you're welcome to stay and participate, actually, in discussions that we have. So feel free to stay, but of course we understand that you may have work that you need to do, and of course feel free to leave. And yeah. I think Dr. Eisendrath Rogers has a question.
I just wanted to acknowledge Rutik for your contribution and your hard work on Saturday at the March for Our Lives. Zoe and Alden, you may well have been there also. I just happened to know him when we ended up walking together for a little bit. But thank you, and for all of you, for the work that you did and putting that on. It's quite successful, very impactful. Thank you.
I just want to ask the young man from Morro Bay if he could state his first name again.
That would be Daniel.
Daniel, thank yeah. you, Daniel.
Okay. Well, let's move on to item number 3.02, College and Career Readiness. This will be presented by Liz Moore. Liz. Like Liz Moore and Kim McGrath.
I'd love to get it started. Tonight we have the pleasure of honoring a student at Morro Bay High School that is college and career ready. So as you all know, we've worked towards creating student structures and students that can finish high school being both college and career. I know probably in my high school experience and maybe yours as well, we had to choose, right, that we were either headed and completing courses that would have us ready for a college, or we said we were headed more on a technical track. And the key word in this that I want to honor tonight is and, right? There's no need to choose necessarily anymore. You can be ready for both. So tonight we would like to honor Aspen Bryant. She is a student that is college and career ready. She's a student that has completed two CTE pathways, is in a dual enrolled course, is also A to G compliant, and interested in sports medicine, headed to Cuesta. So fantastic example of college and career ready, and just want to honor her tonight.
I'd like to bring Aspen up to talk to you for a few minutes about her experiences. I want you to know she started in the ninth grade in photography and completed in photography. And she also is going to be a completer in the sports medicine, so she does so many other things.
And so Aspen doesn't need to brag. I'll brag for her.
Oh.
It was a bit awkward. So I was talking to Aspen over there, and I asked, well, what are your plans for next year? So she got into UC San Diego. Cool. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, so I began my ninth grade year with photography, taught by Ms. Moore. And it was kind of a passion of mine because even though I had an eye for art, I definitely did not have a hand for art. So, you know, like a camera was really helpful in that sense that I didn't have to draw anything out or anything like that. So actually that was going to be kind of a career pathway for mine for a long time before I started, you know, developing my interest in medicine. And that's pretty much through my passion for athletics. And, you know, as I kind of wanted to pursue going into sports and athletics in college, I had to, you know, you have to work out more, you have to focus on your nutrition, you know, and all of that really sparked my interest in sports medicine in general. So I did end up taking physiology anatomy this year as well as introduction to sports medicine, and that really solidified my choices in where I want to be in the future. So I did end up getting into UCSD as a human biology major, and I hope to go into behavioral medicine after that. But I'm just honored to be here and really glad that, you know, these pathways are now available for students because it really has, you know, furthened, you know, interviews, skills, and, you know, email, like just little things that have helped me throughout the years. Just the other day we had interviews for scholarships and I got a couple of those, and I'm like, all of it ties back into these opportunities that were given to us students. So thank you.
Questions from the board? Well, I do have a couple of questions for you.
Yeah.
I see that you were a Skills USA competitor. What did you compete in with Skills USA?
We competed in photography that year. So.
Cool. And what, I'm curious, you said you had a real strong interest in athletics. What's your athletic interest?
I am a swimmer and water polo player, and I hope to continue water polo at UCSD.
Great. So I take it you like the new pool.
I love the new pool. So, yeah, I'm actually headed back there after this.
Oh,
so.
any words about tomorrow night's athletic contest?
Be there.
Okay, great. Great. Any other questions from board members? Well, Aspen, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. On behalf of the board, we just want to wish you congratulations. It sounds like you've just got some really cool, super cool stuff going on. And again, just congratulations.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
So let's move on to item number 4.01, which is correspondence. The board did receive correspondence from Lucas Sokolowski regarding new water fountains, I believe, at Laguna Middle School. Is that correct? Thank you very much. And I believe that his letter was responded by, was you, Mr. Pinkerton? Great. Thank you very much. Okay, let's move on to item number 4.02, public comment. So I just want to remind people of a couple of things before we start with public comment. The first is that anybody wishing to the board will be given an opportunity at this time. We would appreciate it if you would identify yourself so that we can recognize you. And if you represent a group, please let us know what that is. You will have 3 minutes to present your topic to the board. At the end of 3 minutes, I will ask you to end. If you have materials, please give them to Mrs. Holmes so that she can distribute them to the board. In addition, we have a document camera there that you can use. If you have questions, they'll either be answered by me or referred to staff members present. We will not take any action during public comment. And again, if you can criticize school operations and programs, but we won't hear personal complaints of school personnel or complaints against an employee of the system. Given that, is there anybody that would like to address the board in public comment? Seeing none, I'll bring it back and let's get back to item number 5.01, which is our business and budget update. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of give the board an update on our LCAP process in terms of budget and kind of where we're at. So Mrs. McGrath and myself finished our presentations to all the school sites and to the district office and our EL parent groups and our, you know, just everybody that we kind of reach out to explain the LCAP. Our focus this year in particular was getting away from the big overall budget discussion, because that's going to be done another time. You know, led by Dr. Prater, and we have our public forums coming up, those types of things, but really wanted them to understand the LCAP, that we have this plan that's set aside specifically for English learners, economically disadvantaged, foster homeless youth, and there are dollars that will always be there, no matter what we do with our budget, focused on those kids. And so I think it helped. I think it really, people kind of understood a little bit more in terms of what the LCAP was and the discussions. Right now, my secretary Mandy's putting together the survey responses. So, along with Mrs. Shields and Mrs. McGrath, pulling all that information now that we've received, we had a ton of responses, in particular from parents this year. So, a lot of parent responses. So, hopefully, you know, we did a good job of getting that out and getting that. So, as they break that down, I think they're going to meet with their LCAP group on Thursday to kind of see if there's some major themes as we go through. This is the first year of our 3-year LCAP plan. So we're not looking at major changes to the LCAP itself, but there are minor tweaks and things that we may want to focus on as we move forward, and we'll be bringing that to the board.
Great. Mr. Quisenberry.
Yes, Mr. Pinkerton. So you were talking about a gratifying response to this, and this is the survey that the principals have been referring to in their newsletters.
Yes.
Great. Thank you.
Absolutely. On top of that, we had our study session about safety, kind of moving forward. So I just wanted the board to know I've reached out to Dr. Brescia at the County Office of Education about putting together kind of a law enforcement, school districts, kind of joint committee and really looking at starting at the very basics of school safety plans. What are the incidents? What do we need to work on? What should we know? How should we get this out? Because right now I'm getting inundated by everything from bulletproof glass to fencing to first aid kits to, you know, just on and on, which all may be fantastic. But I really want to dive into those plans and then from there kind of build out what the best next step should be as a district. So we're looking at everything together. And so I hope to hear back from Dr. Brescher about that soon. If not, we'll go ahead and just do it ourselves as a district and kind of push that envelope and get all the different groups from Morro Bay, Los Osos, Sheriff's Office, and see if we can make some headway in just making sure that our basic plans are what they need to be.
Great. Thank you. Questions for Mr. Pinkerton? I think one thing, Ryan, that I'm aware of, I believe that there was a bill introduced in the state legislature to require active shooter drills as part of our school site safety plans. Are you aware of that? And do we have any plans to do that if we're not doing it already?
So again, we've done that. We've done those at both Morro Bay High and San Luis Obispo High School. It's not an annual thing that we've done. So that may be something we have to look at in terms of integrating those. You know, we don't normally do those at elementary sites. It kind of goes back to those questions about, you know, what types of drills should we have? How should these be implemented? Should we do them at every site? So, you know, are we doing fight and flight with them? Or do we want people to shelter down in place? There's just so many questions that I have in terms of best policies, practices moving forward. And so I think it's important for us to get that law enforcement tie-in. And again, I think the hopeful piece of it is that they'll also, tie in amongst themselves, right? I know the sheriff's office does a good job of kind of trying to coordinate and getting all of our site plans and information and is able to share all those things. But, you know, there's still some questions that I have about, you know, is everybody connected? And if we do have an emergency, how is that response going to be handled? So I think it'll be a good discussion. I'm looking forward to it in terms of just getting down into the plans themselves. I'm very hopeful that that's going to lead us to what the best next steps will be.
Great. So we're looking for a coherent and coordinated effort, I
think. Absolutely.
Is what you're saying.
Yes.
And I did talk to CSBA about the site safety plans and suggested that we may want to sponsor a bill that would keep certain parts of the school safety plans confidential, and I believe that is something that's on the docket up in Sacramento. Mr. Buckman?
Yeah, if I can, Chris. Currently in the school safety plans, anything that involves the police and their activities and their planning at school sites is already confidential.
Okay.
So I think it's a great idea, though, to probably re-examine it in light of what's been happening.
Mr. Millar?
I know it's probably premature to ask you about the structure of the group that would undertake this, but if there's board membership desired or involvement desired, I would be interested in doing it because I have a law enforcement background. And
absolutely.
And I am very keen about the issue, as Dr. Prater knows. So we communicate quite a bit. Just throwing it out there. I don't often volunteer.
Yep. Great.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Let's move on to 5.02, Mrs. McGrath.
Thank you. I wanted to give a Just One Job Fair update, and Ratik did some of that. So just to let you know, kind of a shout out to Liz Moore, who really did a fantastic job organizing that. When you walked in the room, there were over 54 businesses or nonprofit agencies there represented with students, and the teachers did an amazing job of having them prepared, doing mock interviews and really having them set up to be engaged and to have productive conversations. So a great experience for everyone involved. Every business that I walked around and spoke with was really impressed and thought it was a fabulous experience. And they were all saying, I don't think I acted like that when I was a junior in high school. And we're pretty impressed with the kids that we're producing. So that was a great experience. As Ryan said on the LCAP feedback, and Amy and I are meeting with the LCAP advisory group on Thursday, so it'll be another next step, kind of an opportunity to analyze that feedback. Just to let you know also, we've had the fortune, or some might say misfortune, to be selected for a federal program monitoring review. So this is just, you know, a routine thing that occurs, but we were the lucky ones that drew the name there along with Lucia Marr. It is going to be an online review, and it looks like it will be Title I related, although they haven't committed to that for sure. So we will let you know. It's typically a fairly time-consuming process, but also a good way to just kind of make sure everything's in order. So we will let you know.
Okay. Any questions for Mrs. McGrath? Okay, let's move on to Measure D update. I believe that would be Mr. Pinkerton again.
Yeah, well, we just had our study session again, kind of outlining some of the things that are happening with projects. Excited tonight to finally get the Student Sports Center performing space, performance arts space for San Luis Obispo High School underway. It's been a while in the making in terms of some of our projects and getting them going. They poured concrete today on the new math wing, the old annex building, which is nice to see that kind of developing. And you'll have to go by and see, but I was kind of shocked how big that that classroom building is. So it's really nice. Mr. Holk and myself continue weekly to meet with all of our project managers, along with Mr. Bonin, to kind of keep abreast of what's happening budget-wise, those types of things. We have taken over some of the overall budget structure. Instead of using Julie Avnet through Spectrum Solutions, Kelly in the BGT office and myself have been going through, redoing those budgets ourselves so that we have a better control and handle on where we're headed. So we've been working on, Mr. Holk and myself, with our project managers to get a better grasp of our weekly check on our budgets for each of our projects that are happening currently. And so those two things should come together. And so I hope to share that with the board at our next study session.
And I drove by Morro Bay High today, and it looked like there was some work going on in the football field. Can you tell me about that?
So we have the track project is happening. So new synthetic track, new ADA bleachers on both sides, new long jump, triple jump, pole vault, pits. So that's all kind of happening right now at Morro Bay High. Field project just finished. So that was the softball, baseball. We're waiting on some electrical information on the J wing, but that's continuing on. Our hope is that will open up, which is kind of the CTE wing of classrooms at Morro Bay will open up in the fall. And so it's exciting. It's exciting to finally see some projects. I know it's been painful for some of our staff to just wait and wait and wait and wait for things to go. And, you know, fortunately, we're finally starting to kick off. And I think what's going to happen over the next year or two, it's going to be a when is this going to be over kind of fight with staff. So, but yes, progress is it's finally nice to see some things progressing and getting some buildings up.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Let's move on to item number 6.0, unless I don't see any lights on. Let's item 6.01, Energy Services Contract. This will be a public hearing. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so Prop 39 was passed by the state about 5 years ago, and basically the focus of the Prop 39 was to give school districts funds so that they could do energy efficiency projects. And it was kind of twofold. It was also not just to help school districts in funding those energy efficiency projects, but it was also to kind of provide jobs in the industry. So that was kind of their goal, I think, when they started. So over the past 5 years, we've developed these, we've taken these fees in. We have done all of our high bay lighting at all of our at Loams, Lambs, San Luis Obispo High School, and Morro Bay High School, and our gymnasiums. So moved to LEDs, which is awesome. You know, the days of hitting the light button and it takes a half hour for the lights to come on, right, is over. It's right now. You can instantly press the button, dimmer switches, all those things. So that's been a huge positive. At that same point, we hired Dave Houghton from Avila Partners. So this is a process. You have to prove that these energy efficiencies make a difference and that they're enough to warrant receiving the fund. So Mr. Houghton, there's calculators that he uses and puts in and looks at each light and the type of light it is and how much efficiency comes and what the cost savings is and does all of that breakdown for us, which is in front of you tonight. For us, instead of hiring somebody to come in, an architect, to do this and plan and go through it, it was actually in our best interest to work with a local company, Toma Electric in this case. We've used two separate electrical contractors for our other projects. But in this case, we felt it was best to use them to help us go into our sites, count every single light, set up a plan for the best way for us to utilize these dollars at each of our school sites. So that is the plan that they've put together, which is the next item on the agenda in terms of resolution and contract. And so they've done that. They've gone through everything. And so as part of setting up this design build plan, and you can do this with energy efficiency projects in the state of California, like we did with our gym lighting as well. We did the same type of arrangement. So that's tonight is to enter into that design build agreement with Tome Electric. And so as part of that, you have to have a public hearing to begin.
Great. So I'm going to open up the public hearing for item number 6.01, Energy Services Contract. If there's anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item, please come forward. And seeing none, I'm going to close this public hearing, and let's move on to item number 7.01, which is Resolution 14-17-18, the Energy Services Contract with which you just referenced.
Yes. So we, along with the gym lighting, we also did a zero net energy project at Los Osos Middle School, which already has done that entire site. So both interior and exterior lighting, we received that prop, or we received the zero net energy grant as well to help and coordinate that effort along with some of our Prop 39 dollars. So we took the rest of the funds, worked with Dave Houghton from Avila Partners, worked with Tome Electric, and basically zeroed in all of our sites outside of the two comprehensive high schools where we're going to be doing major construction, modernization, new lighting systems anyways at those points. So it was kind of futile to think about utilizing these dollars for those projects. Meanwhile, we had enough needs at all of our other sites that we're not doing a lot of projects on to go ahead and utilize these dollars. So basically, all the rest of the money, which is approximately $1 million, is going to retrofit all of the interior lighting at all of our other school sites, except for the two comprehensive high schools, and Laguna Middle School. So that is the one other school that's left off at this current time. So so that plan was put together. So our goal would be to bring Laguna up, in future times. In another year or so, go ahead and do that school as well. So all the schools were laid out. We have about five schools that through this process of going through the lighting are going to get all of their exterior lights done as well. Our focus was interior, but there are about five sites that get exterior lighting done as well through this project. So part of it, you have to prove that you have a savings. So the one savings page, with Kim, you can click on really quick, energy lighting savings. So basically, through the calculations that you go through with the state that you have to approve, we save about $55,000 a year based on the upgrades that we're discussing today. So there are, basically the electrical savings happens. One of the weird aspects of it is the second one, which is there's actually a negative or an increase in the use of gas, natural gas, because I guess the lights, and it's part of the equation that you have to do when you change LEDs from the old fluorescent bulbs, is that you have to run the heater more in those scenarios potentially because the old lights give off heat. So it's an interesting dynamic that's part of the calculation. You lay it out. So Mr. Houghton put all that together for us. We just had it all approved. This entire plan was approved by the state in February to move forward. So all the calculations, everything, there were a few minor tweaks he had to go back and work with the state on, but it meets all of the Prop 39 requirements. And again, in working with, and Rick Stimson is kind of the lead project manager for this and has been working directly with Mr. Houghton, with Tome Electric as they went through every single school site, every single classroom, counted every single light bulb to kind of put this kind of best case scenario plan together.
Okay. Mr. Quisenberry, then Mr. Buckman.
So the LED lights also have a longer lifespan. Is that true?
Yes, absolutely. Much longer.
Then as I looked at this, Ryan, and this is phenomenal. I mean, this is just great. As I looked at this, the T8s, are those the ones in the multipurpose rooms in the gyms?
No, those are actually classroom. So those are the fluorescent bulbs that are in the older, and Mr. Holcomb can jump in and help me out with some of these. He'll know that probably more than I will, but they're actually, this is all classroom lighting. There are the high, I believe it's the HID that's on the list. Those are the ones that are in our multi-purpose rooms, and they're high-density lighting. So those that's part of it as well in terms of doing the multi-purpose rooms at those sites.
Okay. Mrs. Shepherd.
And just to confirm, the comprehensive high schools will have energy-efficient lighting. We're just...
Absolutely.
That's going to be paid for out of the
yes.
bond dollars?
Yes.
As included in the new construction?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And I just want to say, I think... I know we have students that are very sensitive to the buzzing noises that the fluorescent bulbs make. Right.
As we hear right now.
Yeah, right, exactly. Right, Mrs. Frost? And I think this will make the classroom environments actually better for some of our students, too. Yeah. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Mrs. Neuhauser, 3 minutes, please.
My name is Judy Neuhauser. I'm just curious as to what, if there has been any consideration. When I go to the eye doctor, they're talking about LED and lights, and you need blue in your glasses in order to protect them from retinal damage. And, I mean, I know it's a controversy. I know it's continuing to evolve as people are looking at the blue light in the LEDs. And one of the things they talk about are diffusers, which will help modify that. And I'm just curious, has any consideration gone into the issue of the possibility of retinal damage with the LED lights?
Thank you, Mrs. Neuhauser. Is there anybody else that would like to address the board on this item? Mr. Pinkerton, did you have a comment?
You know, I can't answer that question.
Okay.
I wish I could. Okay. I can find out and talk to Mr. Houghton, our from Avila Partners, and kind of let the board know about that aspect of it. But it hasn't been something that has been a discussion point in terms of moving forward, where that's come up before.
Great. Thank you. All right, Mr. Millar.
I'm ready to move resolution number 14-17-18.
Mr. Buckman is seconding that. So we have a motion by Mr. Millar, a second by Mr. Buckman. Is there any other discussion among the board members? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Mrs. Holmes?
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mr. Buckman?
Aye.
Mr. Questenberry?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Aye.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisenrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Passes 7-0.
Great. Let's move on to item number 8.01, our next generation science standards update. And I believe that's Tristan Shorba. Hello, Tristan.
Hi, and good evening. I'm Tristan Shorba. I'm our district's science teacher on special assignment, and it's my pleasure to provide an update on our science transition to these new California science standards. This is, of course, part of LCAP Focus Area 1, alignment to state standards and student learning and achievement. As I shared before, the next generation science standards represent a really large shift in K-12 science education, very similar to the shifts expected to math learning and instruction in Common Core, focusing specifically on students learning in through active inquiry-based instruction, really focusing on students learning as scientists and engineers practice and develop their understanding of the field. This also is a focus on students applying their learning beyond the classroom walls and extending that into explaining real-world phenomenon and solving and addressing real-world problems. There's also this component that it's not just about science, that it's also about engineering, that science is all about explaining the what, how, when, where, why, and engineering is about taking that body of science knowledge and then applying that to solve problems that affect us in our society. Also, of course, there's this piece of preparing our students for college and career readiness, as well as being scientifically literate citizenry. And, of course, one of the great things about these new science standards is that they align well with the Common Core standards for math and ELA, and so that all these educational initiatives are moving in a similar direction in terms of expectations of student learning and outcomes. As I've shared before, there is a new science assessment from the state, the California Science Test, also known as the CAST. A few updates for you to let you know about. First off, again, this assessment will be administered in grades 5, 8, and once in high school. This year, we are participating in a statewide field test where we are just reporting participation rates. Next year, we are looking at the first year of an operational test next spring, and then, of course, moving forward. The structure of the test is going to be very similar to the existing assessments for math and English language arts. Some differences that are interesting is that the fifth grade assessment is actually going to span standards in grades 3, 4, and 5, with K-1-2 science standards being foundational for the understanding of the upper elementary grades, so really emphasizing science instruction being important at every grade in the elementary level.
Yeah, of course.
I need a little help in the K-2 foundational piece.
Sure.
And how it relates.
Please. Sure. Yeah, absolutely, because the standards themselves spiral and build every year, and so that the K-2 standards are foundational kind of understandings and skills and knowledge that are continuing to be built on in grades 3, 4, 5, and beyond, and so that even though they're not directly assessed in the fifth grade assessment, they are kind of indirectly assessed as they are foundational for success in grades 3, 4, 5. Absolutely.
Mr. Buckman, on this slide.
Would you?
Yeah. Just a quick question. So when I looked at it, the test we're going to be... So as I looked at this, the tests are going to be administered in 5, 8, and once in high school.
Correct.
And I'm just kind of, well, freshman, junior. So
yeah,
there
absolutely.
A reason why it's vague?
Absolutely. We do have some discretion. It's a very interesting assessment situation. We do have some choice as a local school district about at what grade level. The grade level options are 10th, 11th, or 12th grade, and we haven't come to a full decision about that yet. My feeling is without a full teacher consensus, probably 10th or 11th grade is most likely.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
As for the high school assessment, it says it spans those three courses, biology, yeah. Chemistry, and physics.
Yes.
So the student, are we assuming that all of our students are going to cover all three of those subjects?
Yeah.
I mean, in their high school career?
The high school assessment is going to span, so we have these new NGSS line courses, and so covers all the assessment itself covers all the high school performance expectations, also known as the standards. And for us, those are addressed throughout biology, chemistry, and physics. You're completely right. And so for us, there is a concern, a potential hiccup or obstacle, if you will, that not all of our students take physics. And so that is not just our local district, something we need to look at some points, but it's also a statewide thing because of the California graduation requirement for science is 2 years, and according to state frameworks and recommendations, we're looking at about 3 years of science requirements. So there is an incongruency in that. Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely. So kind of continuing on moving forward, and then the eighth grade assessment spans also grades 6, 7, and 8 as well. So again, some very interesting things assessment-wise coming down from the state. There is, of course, an alternative assessment, the CAW for science, which are available for students with very certain disabilities or IEP designations. So before we kind of talk about where we are and where we're headed, I'm just a quick overview of where we've been. Really, again, these science standards were adopted back in 2013. We were in the midst of implementing and transitioning to Common Core Math and ELA. And so really we were primarily just an awareness of the new standards when they first were adopted. From there was a formation of elementary and secondary steering committees being participated by teachers and administrators, and really just looking at deepening understanding of the new standards, what they mean, and really, to be all in all honesty, not really understanding, both not just in our district but statewide, the breadth and depth of the changes. I mean, these are very large changes in our K-12 science expectations. There's also the recognized need of someone to lead and support this transition in our district. And so kind of moving into 15-16, that was when I was hired to facilitate that and support that. And since then, I've been working with our steering committees at all levels to ensure we have a sound plan that's highly participatory, engaging teachers in professional development and understanding the shifts, understanding the changes, and really making sure that the instruction and teacher understanding is continuing in the right direction as it really should be. And in 15-16, our middle school teachers chose to adopt the preferred integrated model for grades 6, 7, and 8. That was based off of kind of state recommended choices.
Could you describe what that is,
please? Yeah, absolutely. And so before, in grades 6, 7, and 8, it was much more of a discipline-specific model, though it was lightly integrated. So 6th grade was earth science, 7th grade was life science, 8th grade was physical science. And what the integrated model does is it attempts to really blend and represent science as it is practiced and understood in the real world. So it's not just about physical science. It's not just about earth science. That really all these sciences blend over into each other. And so really a robust understanding of, let's say, ecology in ecosystems involves life science. It involves physical science. It involves, you know, physical science as well. And so that's kind of what this model for grades 6, 7, and 8 really try and do and really try to bring in the ways students are learning as science is practiced and learned and applied in the real world.
Great, thank you. Mm-hmm.
And then moving forward, last year we participated in the state pilot of the new state assessment, the CAST. The state also adopted a new science framework, which has been an incredibly helpful tool in allowing us to align our instruction and align our courses and support our teachers in their implementation and transition. We also started getting our elementary teachers on board by updating our elementary science curriculum, FOSS, updating the first module of 3 last year, and our elementary teachers, K-5, really focusing on implementing that one well and then moving forward on a 3-year update. From there, we also utilized the new science framework from the state to look at a new high school course model. And so we have chosen to implement what's called the 3 course model for science in high school. And what that does is it takes biology, chemistry, and physics, and it also then integrates the earth and space science standards and engineering within those courses. And that's kind of what we're moving forward to in aligning our instruction and offerings with. What we've been focusing on this year, again, we have the field test this year. What we've been focusing on in elementary is implementing our second FOSS module this year, an update to that. And I've been working with teachers to help facilitate that as well. I've also been working with our ELA TOSA to work on aligning and integrating science and English language arts to support teachers in their instructional efficiency and also really deepen student learning as well. I've also worked with our elementary steering committee to create a very hopefully robust and strong materials management system, and that's actually already begun to be used by some teachers, and they've been big fans. It's been very good feedback we've been getting from teachers as well. And then we've been also working on our steering committee to create a science lead and support model to implement next year so that this process can continue moving forward in grades K-5. In middle school, we've been working to transition content through the different grade levels to prevent learning gaps as we're moving towards full implementation of the integrated model. Our teachers have been working collaboratively with each other, especially grades 7 and 8 teachers working with 6th grade to support kind of that content shift, because a lot of stuff from 7th grade is actually moving content-wise into 6th grade. So we're kind of having to shuffle things around content-wise and support teachers in that, and we've been able to actually provide some instructional materials for our teachers to kind of test and kind of help bridge some of those gaps in their knowledge and just their own resources. In high school, we've been working to implement our new course model, specifically focusing on that new NGSS biology course taught to freshmen. It's actually taught to freshmen and sophomores this year because of transitioning models. And so both sides have been working very collaboratively with each other to design new units, design new lessons, new assessments, and to continue implementing this new model, also testing some instructional resources that we hope to, in both middle and high school, in the next year or two, to pilot, adopt, and purchase to help with teachers with the instruction.
Excuse me, Mr. Shorbrook, could you go back to the elementary there? You talked about materials management system.
Absolutely.
Is that like materials for science, a lab type of materials?
Yeah, so these are all the consumables and organisms for the FOSS modules. And so it's actually a digital Google document that actually kind of helps the teachers auto-calculate their resource needs based off number of students that they're anticipating for next year, based off of number of teachers, and it really kind of helps them input the quantities they need very quickly and efficiently.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Next year, we do anticipate again an operational assessment. We are also anticipating an instructional materials adoption list from the state in November. And so that's going to really be helpful, especially for secondary. So in elementary, they'll be updating that third and final FOSS module. And again, really focusing on developing methods and resources to really align science and English language arts and to integrate them so that the reading and the writing and the science kind of all connect and work with each other to increase not just depth of student knowledge, of course, but also just teacher efficiency and instructional capacity. And, of course, we have that system of science leads and support teachers in place to continue supporting our teachers and moving the implementation forward. In middle school, we'll be looking to pilot and adopt instructional materials next year. There'll be continued need for teachers to collaborate and engage in professional development to continue understanding the shifts and how the curriculum works with those changes as well. Again, just I can't emphasize enough how deep and how wide the changes are under NGSS from the old standards, and so ongoing professional development at every level is needed. We are also moving middle school health instruction from the science course to actually a designated health course that's embedded in a required elective wheel. And that's good on both ends. That allows more science instructional time for the science teachers. That also allows a really robust health instruction for the students in middle school.
Yeah, sure. The thought occurred to me, and I don't know if it's a valid concern, but would this mean there are going to be students who won't take health as an elective? And is that a serious concern, or would they get the same kind of course content material through other parts of the curriculum?
In terms of the health instruction?
Yes.
Yeah, my understanding is that it will be a required health course that all middle schoolers, I believe it's in seventh grade, will take. And that's also in part from some state requirements as well.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. At the high school next year, teachers will need to be continuing to refine their new courses. They've been working incredibly hard, long hours, late nights, a lot of sub days to make these courses work, and they should be incredibly commended for the work they've been doing. Continued refining those, continuing collaboration and planning, and again, hopefully being able to review and select some instructional materials next year because, again, they've been making everything on their own. And so looking forward to the next year or two to provide that will be a great asset for everybody. We've also been working on, that's what's been going on in the classroom. We've also been working externally, of course, building parent awareness through family nights. Pretty much all of our elementary schools over the last few years have engaged in STEAM, science and engineering nights. We've also been able to tap into Cal Poly a little bit more as well, not only as professional development providers, but also being able to bring in science students. Undergraduate and graduate students are engaging in active science research, and they're presenting their work and their findings to our middle school students. And it's a great thing to see that modeled by kind of the next generation of scientists, and our students hopefully get to see themselves in some way, shape, or form in these students and what they're presenting. So it's been a pretty neat opportunity. So I will say, over the last few years in our implementation progress, we are in a strong position as a district, especially when you consider statewide what's going on. We've made some leaps and bounds. Our K-12 teachers have embraced these changes. They have made a number of the shifts that are needed. But the reality also is as I mentioned a number of times, that these shifts are very both deep and wide compared to what we realized even just a handful of years ago. And so, of course, there's still continued needs to continue the refinement of instructional strategies at every level, making sure that students are really actively engaging as scientists and engineers, exploring the science concepts and begin to explain them and not have it vice versa, not having that be the teacher. A big piece is assessment, and again, that's not just for us, that's for statewide as well, is that there's been a lack of really tools and resources for assessment development. And so I anticipate those over the next couple of years to be much more robust and much more helpful over time. And then, of course, as I mentioned, the need for instructional materials to be provided in, at the secondary level as well in the upcoming year or two. And then finally, I do want to take this moment and just kind of step back and look at the big picture and say, why? And really, at the end of the day, I believe that NGSS is an indication for us as an educational system to step back and say science is for everyone. That we live in the 21st century, and that really, historically, science has been for some and not for all. And really, that's what the NGSS, I believe, is all about. And so when we talk about science for all, we talk about that science and instruction being an equity issue. And so that we need to continue ensuring that science is taught at every grade level, every year, to every student. Because if that's not happening, then that's happening in certain sites, certain teachers, and there's gaps that happen. Unintentionally, of course, with always the best intention, but we need to make sure that science is equitably applied throughout our district. This also helps our English language learners, because as students are learning the academic content, they're talking about science, they're reading about science, they're writing about science, they're not only developing science proficiency, but they're also developing their language acquisition as well and accelerating their ability to learn the English language. And if we're also having students engage in real-world problem-solving, explaining phenomena through inquiry, we're also engaging them, giving them a reason to come, to learn, to enjoy, and we're igniting their passion for innovation, for creativity, and for discovery. And what all this does at the end is it creates an environment of excellence. Excellence for our schools, excellence for our county, excellence for our students as individuals as they have a K-12 science foundation that might allow them to go into a STEM field where there's increased job opportunity, increased income opportunity, but also excellence for us as a society. And that when we have more people engaged in problem solving and explaining, then what we have is the ability to solve problems in our world that today seem unsolvable. So, thank you.
Great. Are there questions from board members? Dr. Eisenrath Rogers, Mr. Buckman.
Thank you, Mr. Jorba. Excellent, excellent job. My question has to do with equity around between the two high schools in regards to trimester versus semester and tackling these subjects in those two different formats. Do you find that there's one school that has more challenges getting all the information to their students that we'd like to cover?
I mean, there is just there's always that just reality of instructional minutes between the two different systems, and that does present, just as reported by the classroom teachers, the more challenge, you know, with less instructional minutes as opposed to having a little bit more time on a different system.
Does it reflect in scoring or testing? Do you see a difference?
I don't think we do at this point in time. Obviously, I mean, we don't have an operational assessment to gauge anything yet in terms of, you know, student pass-fail rates. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's really teacher in some ways site-dependent and everything, and I know they make adjustments to support students in whatever system they're in.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. I'm curious.
Thanks, Chris. I'm glad you answered it in part. I was concerned when you got to the needs, and I was concerned when you got to instructional materials, and I was really scared that the board hadn't given you the funding you needed to make that happen. But I guess we're going to get our chance.
It's more of a heads up.
Okay. And then as you were talking about that, you were talking about the adoption process for the instructional materials. And so we used to refer to textbooks in that term where we said instructional materials. So two questions. One, are we looking at textbooks? And two, what's the process for the adoption?
Yeah. So there is, in some way, shape, or form, likely going to be a textbook. Of course, the way curriculum is these days, it's going to look drastically different. And it really kind of depends on what publisher we end up going with. Because I've seen basically an all-in-one book where everything's there, the inquiry as well as the reference. And so, and is it digital or is it hardback or both? And so, yeah, we are looking at, you know, a textbook in some way, shape, or form, whatever that is, in 2018-19. And then the process at the middle school and the process for high school, my understanding is that they're fairly different. And so the process for middle school will be much more formalized and kind of a more committee, you know, of teachers and parents and community members. And then the high school, I think there's a little bit more freedom for that.
Okay, so you just answered my last question, which was parent involvement in the,
yes,
in the adoption process.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And I have a question. One concern that I've heard is that given our focus on reading, language arts, and math, that there's sometimes not a lot of time, especially in the elementary school day, to integrate, as it were, the integrated science, the NGSS science standards. You mentioned that there seems to be a confluence of English, English language arts, math, and the NGSS standards. Can you talk a little bit about particularly what you're seeing in our elementary classes and how that's being integrated into the classrooms?
Sure. I will say, probably more where we're at is what we're attempting to is align our curriculums. And so we've been focusing primarily on math and ELA up until recently, and now we're kind of bringing in science. And so those programs are generally well established, the reading and writing. And so we then, last year, took some teacher teams, the ELA, TOSA, and I, and looked at, well, if we overlay these curriculums, where do we see kind of bridges? Where do we see easily identifiable connections between them? And then what are resources that we can identify or topics that we can identify that we could encourage and say, hey, if you are doing informational reading and writing at this point in time, this works really great for your students to do. So when they're learning about climate change, they can do some, informational reading and writing about climate change. So that's kind of been the first step, is to kind of just see how things fit together instructionally, the different curriculums. Our next step is a little bit more ambitious, is really where that integration actually takes place, and kind of there is a much more fluidity to that. And so I know that some teachers, especially schools that are utilizing GLAAD strategies, are actually being much more successful right now in that early steps of the process. I will say we're very early in that process. And again, that's a huge recognized state need, is that if we are wanting more science instruction, even more social studies instruction coming up on the horizon, we need to provide teachers with the supports to really and truly integrate those and to provide the supports to make that happen. And so one of the ways we're trying to do that as well is provide and purchase books that align with the science topics as well as the reading curriculum, and then also kind of have teachers provide, again, suggestions about how can they be utilized not just in the reading curriculum as either supplements or substitutes, but also then how can they connect to the writing curriculum as well, and specific writing topics or prompts, or even shifting the writing product as well.
Other questions from board members? This is a discussion item, so no action will be taken, but is there anybody from the public that would like to address Mrs. Neuhauser? 3 minutes, please.
I am really excited to see the FOSS being integrated at the K-5 level. I echo your concern, Chris, in the sense that what I heard as a response was we're going to be able to provide places where we can have reading and writing that will be integrated into the reading and writing program. But what I didn't hear is how do you make time for the hands-on, for the minds-on exploration? Because children can read about something, but unless there is prior experience with it, it doesn't mean much. And so providing that experiential part is absolutely critical. Things may have changed since I retired, but we were being told hour and a half of reading, hour and a half of writing, hour and a half of math a day. And when you put the PE in, you're left with 10 minutes a day for social studies, science, library, computers, music, art. I mean, it's not a lot of time. So unless there is actual direction to the schools that you're going to pull back on some of that hour and a half for each one of those, there physically is not time for the hands-on science instruction. And doing it as after school, while it may seem a way to be able to do that, is not adequate because there are too many kids that can't participate in that. So I'd like to see some sort of direction comment that comes to the schools that these hands-on experiences are absolutely critical. And give it a time if you need be, but make sure that there's actually time to do it. One of the weaknesses of the FOSS kits is they're assuming that you have an hour a day to do science. That has been my experience with the FOSS kits, and they're excellent, but they're going to have to be modified because there's no way that we're going to be able to provide that hour a day, but it should certainly be more than an hour a week. So I'd like to see that wrestled with and worked with is how do we do this, because science is not a reading lesson. Thanks.
Okay. Mrs. Shields.
Thank you. First of all, thank you, Mr. Shorba, for that outstanding presentation and update. I appreciate the excellence that you brought to it. I just wanted to respond, and I know we're not supposed to, but I just think if we could give you some quick answers that might be helpful in relation to the hour a day. Ms. Neuhauser is correct. That is what FOSS recommends, and Mr. Shorba and teams of teachers have been working on that specifically, and what they've done is they've met, in addition to looking at how they might integrate it, it's what are the key learnings from the module? What are the can't skip, must have, the most important part of a module, and then what goes underneath it that you may include that. What the other thing I wanted to respond to is the issue of you have to teach reading, language arts for a certain time, math certain time. As we were adopting new curriculums and after as we were shifting to Common Core, absolutely, that was a mandate. Where we are now, which finally having a new and NGSS-aligned curriculum, we're all about figuring out how to integrate it. Integration, from my point of view, means you're teaching science during the ELA time. You're teaching ELA during the science time. Absolutely, there has to be time for the hands-on science experiences. That's why we spend the amount of money that we do on FOSS. But it's a problem that is being directly addressed by Mr. Shorba and by teams of our elementary teachers. So I'm proud of that.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay, let's move on to item number 8.02, approve new and modified secondary courses. And that would be Mrs. McGrath.
Good evening. Tonight, I bring forward a group of new courses, including one middle school course that Mr. Shorba mentioned and quite a few high school courses. So just want to go over a few of these ideas with you. One is the only new middle school course we're proposing this year is the new health course that Mr. Shorba mentioned. I think this is a great opportunity. Science has been a champion of health for a while, and there are a lot of new health requirements that I think it's the time to look for a way to give it its own course that is required in seventh grade and to put a great focus there. It's a good time to do that as well as the science teachers are feeling the need to have additional instructional opportunities and then also to have kind of health as its own course. So we're proposing that tonight as a required seventh grade course. It would be part of the wheel, and you're right, it would be the one mandatory one. There would be no choice for students when it comes to that one. The other courses, you will see that there's an abundance of CTE courses as we continue to clean up those pathways. I passed out the CTE pathway sheet that I think helps clarify. You have Morro Bay in front of you, and I can pass out Slow High next. You see the list of courses here, the high school courses in this, but that I think creates a lot of clarity. You'll see where those courses fall, how they lay within the sequence. Keeping in mind that what we're trying to work towards with career technical education is creating a sequence of courses that help students build their skills and to work towards getting those courses A to G approved as well, so that just as we were speaking about, a student can be college and career and not have to choose one or the other. So this evening you will see courses within many CTE pathways: agriculture, digital film production, theater, journalism, culinary arts, etc. I also want to commend Liz Moore and the CTE teachers for working collaboratively to really look at how they could make adjustments to modernize their courses, gather input from business and industry to make sure that we're producing students that match what business and industry is needing, and also to make the needed adjustments in order to submit these courses for A to G approval. Happy to answer any questions.
Great. Questions from board members. Mr. Buckman and then Mrs. Sheffer.
So these look exciting as heck, and it's really nice. And so I'm assuming that we're making these, we've had these classes before, but now they're going to be A to G in career technology, CTE.
So part of it is, you're correct that we are submitting these for A to G approval. We kind of go through this process first, and then we submit to the UCCSU system for approval. Some of these you will see that they sound familiar, right? I mean, theater course and some of those things, band, et cetera, that we've had before. The teachers have worked with our CTE coordinator to modernize them or to ensure that they could be CTE eligible, right? So one of the things to think about, I'll just throw in there, is when I think about band as a good example in my mind. So you think about marching band. Marching band is an amazing performing arts course that provides a great opportunity for students, but not necessarily towards a career, right? So you can have music courses that are CTE within a CTE pathway, but they have to be more like an audio engineering or a music and technology or something that would attach a career to it. When you think of a course like marching band, for example, not a lot of marching band careers, right? So fantastic as a course, but just not necessarily career technical education.
So in just in follow-up to that, so I was a little concerned as I read these course descriptions, particularly the jazz ensemble and the wind ensemble. I think those two and possibly another. They talk about students are highly encouraged or students are expected to have private lessons. And for me, this becomes an equal versus equity issue. And I'm not sure what staff's response would be to this, but I am concerned that I'm not sure what it would play in a teacher's mind and who gets into a class, but I am concerned about it as from an equity issue. Some kids, everybody can take a music lesson, but not all kids have the ability to take a music lesson. So I also think it's a problem because some kids can study and work at home and practice really hard and maybe reach the same level as a student that's getting private lessons. So I'm concerned that both these class course descriptions include terminology like that.
I think it's actually good input. And I think we would never want our wording to inadvertently discourage a student from taking that course. So we might suggest slight change to that wording to encourage students to know that additional practice is needed or something that might not scare a student off, that we would never want to give that impression to.
Mm-hmm. Mrs. Sheffer?
I have a question and then a comment. So I'll do the question first because it kind of dovetails with some comments that Mrs. Shields made earlier about the elementary learning. And she was talking about how subject matter is integrated across the board. And I'm wondering with some of these courses if there's a kind of opportunity to include or have a common thread among them with things having to do with, I don't know, cultural competencies across the curriculum for issues such as, you know, various ethnic backgrounds, diversity, inclusiveness, topics like that. I'm just curious as to how we approach some of that because we can't have electives in every single thing.
Yeah, it's a great point. I think the health course is an obvious spot there. But when you think about career technical education, part of their standards are what we think of as kind of soft skills, mm-hmm. right? And I think that's also a perfect opportunity to teach students some of the soft skills that go along with functioning well in a workplace. So I think a lot of those things you mentioned talk about how we relate to others, how we treat other people, and I think that is an opportunity within the CTE standards and other courses to be able to have that integrated.
And do we encourage our teachers to make sure those soft skills are included?
Yes. What we do is, especially in the CTE courses, they have actual standards outlined around communication, around things like that, that they, when they're building their curriculum, they show how that's integrated all throughout the year, you know, leadership skills, communicating with others, et cetera. And so that's what we do when we look at the curriculum that's being built and the outline of the course.
Okay. And then a comment I have, I just note that there are, on the handout you gave and then in our board packet, there were additional courses that are a dual enrollment with Cuesta. Would you just speak to that for a moment?
Yeah, absolutely. The page you have in front of you, you'll notice when a course is in blue that it is already received A to G approval. And then there's also a notation, I don't have it in front of me, that may note which ones are dual enrolled. So we are working to continue to build that. And some of it is dependent on the teacher's credential. So sometimes it depends on that. They have to meet whatever Cuesta's requirement is. So when the teacher does meet that requirement, the Cuesta teacher has to agree and kind of create that agreement with our teacher. And there have been great conversations in order to create those dual enrolled classes and to continue to grow that.
Mr. Buckman, or I'm sorry, Mr. Quisenberry, please stand. And then Mr.
Buckman. So my question has to do with, I was looking through the arts courses, and I noticed that band had in band one an audition, and I wonder if that was correct. It seems to me band one is that introductory band program, and one may not have an instrument yet or what have you, and I was wondering about that.
I asked that as well because it felt like that should be the one that grabs everyone. Yeah, I had the same thought. The answer that I got was that that's an opportunity to place students in case they have past experience and make sure that they're starting them in the spot that matches where their skills are currently. So if they have no experience, they're obviously welcome to come, and that would be the appropriate spot for them.
In band one. So right. So the term audition, what does that mean to you?
Mm-hmm. Try out, and maybe it might, maybe it's implying that you wouldn't make anything, huh? Mm-hmm.
So I could have an interest in band and enroll in, talk to my counselor and enroll in that class, but I may not get to be in the band if I don't pass an audition. Is that?
I see your point that it could maybe give a wrong impression. So maybe we need to change the wording on that as
but
well.
But that's not the case.
It's not the case that I understand. True.
Sure. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Buckman, did you have another comment?
Yeah, I just, so just to follow up on Ellen's, I think Ellen's really good question on dual enrollment. In the past when we discussed this and had presentations, it seems one of Cuesta's primary requirements is that our teacher have a master's degree. And I think this has probably been going on for a while, and I can't remember how many years. So I'm just wondering if we had put in place a plan to either attract more teachers with master's or a plan to give incentives to our staff to get a master's degree.
Yeah, it is the case that often they ask for a master's, not every time. So there's, you know, course by course, they have different requirements. And I think it's something to discuss in the future if we're really in future hiring practices to consider. At this time, I think that we still are on a good path to continue to increase our dual enrollment opportunities.
So is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Okay, I have a question for you, Mrs. McGrath.
Sure.
Do we need to approve this evening?
You know,
sometimes there's an urgency to approving things?
Not as much urgency, yes. There is a sequence, and high schools need it to create their course books. But if we brought it back with a maybe adjusted wording to a couple of those spots, be happy to bring that back to you next time.
With the board's consent, as it were, I would suggest we bring this back to the next meeting and place it on the consent agenda with an edit or or revision of some of the descriptions that I think we talked about. I share Mr. Buckman's concern about anything that suggests private lessons, because that could be interpreted as we're requiring that for a student, and that's clearly illegal. Okay. Would that be the board's consensus if we brought it back for the consent agenda?
Yes.
Okay. Let's do that then. Thank you.
Great.
Okay, let's move. I just lost it. I can't believe it.
One note on the prior agenda item is that we do offer a $1,000 master's degree stipend on our salary schedule for teachers.
Okay. Let's go to item 8.03, approved secondary school instructional schedules for 2018-19. And that would be Mrs. Newland.
So as you know, the contract, the SLCTA contract, requires that each site at the secondary level vote on their schedule annually. And so these are the four secondary schools and the records of their votes. I did have Ms. Rogers Roger ask me why Loam's had a different sheet in the back that was certified from a company out of Quebec called Simply Voting. And according to my text that I got from Mr. Illig, he said that it was the way that it came from SLCTA. So I'm thinking that my guess would be that the teachers at Loam's wanted to do an online survey versus a paper survey, and therefore they needed some kind of agency to certify an online vote, and so that's where they went. It was chosen by SLCTA, by Terry Finnegan from the SLCTA office, was that particular company out of Quebec. So, but it would make sense to me that Loam's, because of their, you know, their passion for technology, would choose an online voting certification system. Mm-hmm.
There we go. Any questions from board members? Is there anybody from the public that would like to address us on this? Okay. This is an action item. Would someone like to make a motion?
You were very quick in asking for...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Mine is not a question. Mine's a comment in it. And I don't know if there are any San Luis High folks out here. I always find it a little disturbing to me, personally, in that... that they can only get a 65% approval of their trimester. It means more than a third of their teachers still are not happy with that system. I do want to commend them for offering a hybrid block as opposed to the 5 of 6, which used to be just the only fallback on those things. So at any rate, I just wanted to make that comment.
Great. Other comments from board members? Anybody from the public like to address us? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board.
I'll move approval of secondary school instructional schedules for 2018-19.
Okay. We have a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back. All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Let's move on to item number 8.05, Measure D Amendment Number 2 to lease back. Did I skip 04? Ah, darn it. I was on a roll. How about item number 8.04, approved board member pay for permissible absence?
Yes, I'm seeking the board's permission to excuse Mrs. Roger for catching that awful, nasty seasonal bug. And she was really, really wiped out and wasn't able to be at the February 27th board meeting. And I'm leaving it in your capable hands.
Great. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address us on this item? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Would someone like to make a motion?
I would move approval of 8.04.
We have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer.
And I'd like to second it. I'd also like to thank Marilyn for not coming to the board meeting. Anyway.
And a second by Mr. Buckman. Any other discussion? All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? And with motion passes 6-0 with one abstention. Now let's move on to item number 8.05, Measure D, Amendment Number 2 to Lease-Leaseback Contract with Wysong Construction for Bellevue Santa Fe Charter School. Mr. Pinkerton.
So, yeah, this is a project that we've been working on for a few years now in the planning phase and kind of moving forward. And it was about last year at this time when we learned about the state proposition passing and charter school funds. So where we had initially had set aside $2,750,000 to do all of the improvements at Bellevue Santa Fe School, which in particular was to replace their modular classrooms and restroom building, kind of redo that whole area, get them out of the floodplain, fix up those rooms, furniture, those types of things. It became clear in our discussions with them, working with them, that they wanted to have nicer, modulars and try to do more work. And so we were super fortunate in that we applied for a grant through the state funds. And so we were able to receive an extra $2.6 million. And so what that meant was not only did they get the nicer modulars, which the board willingly kind of went ahead and put themselves out there and went ahead and voted for those prior to us actually receiving the grant dollars. So fortunately, we have those coming. So what this means is not only are we able to do that new construction at the site, but we're also able to modernize some of the existing structure, the main office building as well. So we've gone out. We've bid the project with Wysong Construction. They're our leaseback firm on this particular project, kind of put all the bids together. So looking at the cost of the portables, ensuring that those classrooms, restrooms, that's all set. That's the first part of the GMP that you'll see in front of you tonight. And then the second part is kind of that modernization aspect of, again, fixing up the main classrooms, re-roofing, doing some work with the science wing as well as the scientificatorium on the campus and doing some other, fire alarm and other great modernizations for that school, right? So we're excited about that. We did have to scale down a little bit of the modernization work based on the numbers that came in. So Mr. Stimson, who's head of this project, met with the site, with the new principal, Holly Warwick, and kind of, they've worked together to kind of come to a good understanding. So our hope is that as we go through this process that we won't have to necessarily spend all the contingency dollars. And if those are not spent, then those can be used as helping get some of those other modernization projects completed over the course of the summer and into the fall. So because Bellevue Santa Fe is kind of its own entity, they were able to kind of work their schedule around to expand their summer. So they're going to actually be open. They're not going to open a little later until September of next year. So that's going to give us a little bigger window to get this construction complete. And we've worked out some contingency plans with them, too, in terms of the main office building, turning that into classrooms, whatever they need to do to ensure that school does get kicked off in the fall right. So it's been a great effort, real positive, I would say, with between Bellevue Santa Fe and their parents and staff and, kind of the project itself, as well as our school district moving forward. So I'm really excited about that. We're going to have a ribbon cutting coming up actually before our next study session in April. And so it should be a real positive thing for everyone. And we'll definitely make sure that you're there to help us celebrate some of these great changes at the site.
Okay, questions from board members. Mr. Buckman, did you have a question?
Yes, please. First of all, Ron, I just want to acknowledge staff for having the foresight and the ability to bring this to a point where you could get in line and get the state money, because if we were not in line, they only freed up $1.3 million. So that's really an accomplishment. The other question I have is, so there's portables that are there now, and mm-hmm. will they work into any of our Measure D needs, or are they just beyond?
Yeah, so two of the portables are actually going to kind of complete our temporary housing at San Luis Obispo High School. So we're going to move two over. The other two will be crunched, and the restroom that's there will just be crunched and demolished kind of in place. They can't really be used on. But, yeah, we are going to kind of take two over, finish that last phase of temporary portables, which is going to allow us then to take a major portion of the 100 building as we begin construction there.
I'm curious, does Bellevue Santa Fe have flood insurance?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay. Thanks.
We can find out.
Are there any questions from board members, Mrs. Sheffer, and then I'll go to the public.
You know, I just wanted to comment that several months ago, Mrs. Roger and I went out to Bellevue Santa Fe with Mr. Holcomb, and these improvements are sorely needed, and I'm glad that they are greatly appreciated.
Yes.
But they're not just improvements, they're necessities, some of them, I think, to that campus. So I'm glad it's all working out, and it'll be lovely to see.
Great. Mrs. Roger.
Yeah, I just, following up on your flood insurance question, wouldn't the district carry flood insurance on property that it owns?
Yeah, I don't want to. We have insurance. We have through CISC and insurance on the site. I'm not positive about the exact, so I don't want to give an answer about the flood part of it. But, you know, I know we are insured, you know, for emergencies, those types of things. But I'll double check.
Thank you.
I do know that this new construction and new modernization took all of that flood aspect into hand. And so we are raising those classroom sites like 4 feet higher than they currently are. So it should be a huge help in terms of, you know, something like that happening, and so it's a positive. But I'll find out for sure. And
we've graded in acknowledgement of the
absolutely
floodplain.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
They made us through DSA and through the, you know, looking at the surveys, those types of things, to take that into consideration.
Great. I don't see any other comments from board members. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on item 8.05? And seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Would someone like to make a motion?
Buckman?
Go with Mr. Buckman as the motion and Mr. Millar on the second. Is there any further?
I'd like to approve Walt Millar's second of the amendment to the
Is there any further discussion on item 8.05? Seeing none, I'll bring it back. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 7-0. I think you addressed us on 8.06. Is there anything else you'd like to say about that? Otherwise, I'll open it up for public comment and then bring it back to the board.
Yeah, again, just moving forward with this, the actual bid itself, I do want to clarify with in this bid, and that we have pulled out the acoustical, the theater equipment aspect of this project thus far. So we're actually working with Gary to make sure that we have parity between Morro Bay High School and what we're doing in the theater there, as well as in this new performing arts space. So there will be an amendment 2 that comes to the board that's specifically designed for that, GMP for that aspect of it. So for the theater curtains, sound system, acoustical treatments, those types of things. So we're working on both of those currently. So those were pulled out of this current bid. So our initial bid from Acme when we got the lease-leaseback project was about 9.4 million. Our current GMP currently is at 8.6. However, there is a larger contingency that we've set up, in particular for the electrical aspect of this. So we did run into some issues with getting the current electricity and tying it into the campus-wide so that the current campus continued to run. And so it's a bit of an unknown how that's going to tie in. So we have put in to our contingency some funds to ensure that we have dollars in place to be able to set that up. This summer we will be running a new infrastructure kind of quadrant, line basically for all of the new infrastructure at the site from the back of the 100 building all the way down past the new math building, old gym, and all the way in front of the 100 building, like right in front of the quad area. So that is a summer project that's going to come to the board probably at our next meeting or the following meeting. So we're kind of trying to get that infrastructure in place prior to us moving forward with a lot of our projects. It was critical to get done so that we could open up the new math building, old annex, as well. So I feel good about our GMP that's come forward. It came in kind of what we expected, which was a positive thing. Still high. I mean, everything it seems like it's high in terms of overall construction costs, but it came in kind of what we expected, and it was low enough to where we're still going to have the dollars to put towards those theatrical aspects as well to kind of make sure that that performance space is a, you know, real positive, bright spot on that campus. So, again, we do have a theater consultant as well as an acoustical consultant that Gary is working with to make sure that it's all tied together. And, again, parity at both Morro Bay High School and SLO High.
Great. Mr. Maher, do you have a question?
This might be something more suited for the next Measure D thing, but I just was wondering how well, and it may, I know it may be an apples to oranges comparison, but how well the GMP, the one we're discussing right now, came in vis-a-vis the early construction estimates that we were making that was informing our planning. And
so the our initial district budget that Mr. Palazzo put together had this building total construction at $9,393,000. The estimate that came back from Jacobus and Young was $9,220,000 after DDs. So we're right in the ballpark in terms of what the estimates were for those buildings. Now, again, they're still high, right? I mean, it's still an estimate, and, hey, we hit the estimate, but it's a high estimate, right? So it's kind of a – and that's just the – like everything is kind of that those higher prices. But it is coming in remarkably kind of where the estimates lie, lay basically, actually lower than what Acme Construction had told us a couple of months ago. What they expected it to come in at, because this is a skilled and trained, we have to have skilled and trained workforces tied into it, right? So the bids actually came in better than they had anticipated, which is positive.
Great. Okay, is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on item 8.06? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Would someone like to make a motion?
I'll move approval of item 8.06, the amendment number 2 to the lease-leaseback contract with Acme Construction.
We have a motion by Mr. Quisenberry, second by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Move on to our action consent agenda. As always, please let me know if you'd like something pulled. 9.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 9.02, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 9.03, disposition of surplus property. 9.04, acceptance of donations. 9.05, approval of foreign exchange organizations. Did somebody say pull on that? No, good. 9.06, approval of field study trip requests.
I'll move approval of items 9.02 through 9.06.
We have a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Mrs. Roger for items 9.02 to 9.06. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Mr. Quisenberry, I think you pulled 9.01.
Yes, I did. I just want to recognize our district librarian, who is retiring, and also that's Sharon Haupt, and I wanted to also recognize Sarah Clow, our elementary teacher that's retiring, and wish them well and thank them for their many years of service.
Would you like to make that motion?
Yes. I move the approval of item 9.01.
And I'll second. I'll let Mrs. Roger seconds it. We have a motion by Mr. Quisenberry, a second by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries 7-0. Let's move on to item number 10.02. Is there any advanced agenda requests? Seeing none, we'll move on to item 11.01, reports by board members. And I'll bet you we got a few of them. So, you know what? I'll start. What the heck? I do want to say that I was able to go to the Morro Bay demonstration, I believe it was last Wednesday, and I just want to congratulate the Morro Bay students for really coming forward and expressing their concerns about school safety. And I'd like to also really thank the school staff and the students for working together to be able to have a place, a safe place for the students to express themselves. And you know what? The Morro Bay police were super there, too. They were there, and my understanding is they actually provided PA for the students, so I want to thank everybody involved in that. Then, like many of you, I marched for life on Saturday, and I would really like to acknowledge several of our students. I don't remember their names, but speakers at the demonstration were from San Luis Obispo High School. The MC was from San Luis Obispo High School. There was powerful poetry read by Morro Bay High School students. Some amazing songs by Pacific Beach and I believe San Luis Obispo High School students, as well as students from throughout the county. And again, I just really want to congratulate our students for standing up for what's right, what I believe is right, which is safety for all of our kids. We want our kids to be able to know that they can come to school in a safe place. And I think they said it all, and I really appreciate what they did. I also participated in the Morro Bay job fair interviews in Mr. Mamarella's class. That was really fun. I got to work with about three groups of five students each and just kind of working on some ideas for them that they can take forward with them when they do some interviews. And then Dr. Prater and I were up in Sacramento last Thursday working with our professional learning network. It was kind of interesting. It was presentations by county superintendents on how they're handling district assistance for programs that are in essentially program improvement. And I think my biggest takeaway was that most of the county superintendents really want it to be about collaboration and local control, figuring that the local districts know what their needs are and how can they assist them. Did I miss anything on that? I think that was pretty much it. Dr. Eisenrath-Rogers.
Thank you. Yeah, my favorite sign I think I saw at the march was education is the most powerful weapon, which is resonates really well with us. I also, this is one of those board walks that I was invited to and couldn't go to, but that I want to talk about it anyway. Teach had its tech competition this past Friday, and I woke up feeling a little achy and not sure what the day was going to go like, so I felt like I didn't want to be around the children, so I asked Mrs. Batistic if I could send my son Max, whom she knows, and who is a techie, and his girlfriend was there too. So they went to judge in my stead, and they came back raving about how the kids did all this intense research and beautiful presentations, and so it was very hard to choose their favorite, but they did choose one, and that was it's called a hydroponic, is that right? No, aquaponic system, where the fish in the fish tank feed the plants at the bottom of the fish tank, and the plants feed the fish, and it's this continuous loop, which sounds rather brilliant to me as well. So that was the upshot of that really cool tech competition. And sorry I couldn't be there, but glad I could get it secondhand.
Well, Mr. Buckman and Mr. Quisenberry.
Thanks. So I, too, was at San Luis High, was able to go to the students on the 14th when they walked out of class. And, again, just a second, what Chris said, students were just so articulate and did such a good job. The planning was so well. But I'm also very proud of the administration for taking a thoughtful and making it a thoughtful process and working with the students so that they could get their opportunity for freedom of speech. I was also very proud of this district for allowing the media on campus. I thought that sent a good message to the students as well as the community. Along with the board, I was able to do the Measure D study session, which this last time was all about safety. I thought it was great. I thought the architect did a great job. I thought it was wonderful to have the police and fire present. And I know there were some questions raised by the board, and some were answered, and some were going to get answers on. This was kind of a sad one. I was able to go to Mrs. Negrante's, I'm going to call it a celebration of light. I was amazed at the size of the crowd, and it looked like there were people there from maybe somebody from all 50 years that she was a teacher. I did attend the PTA administrative dinner, and I hope it's okay with the board, but I did express my thanks from all of us for all of the PTAs. Every elementary school and both our two junior highs, except for Teach, are PTA schools, and so it was really impressive. was at March for Lives. I think with Chris, I did see a lot of our students, but I also saw a lot of our staff, and I was kind of, I thought that was kind of impressive. And then this morning, I was able to volunteer doing mock job interviews for with Liz Moore, and again, just an articulate group of students, and I don't think, I bet they get every job they apply for. Thanks.
Thank you. Well, I can second a few things here that that I attended too. I also had a chance to do mock interviews with Ryan Mamarella's students.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Ellen Sheffer was there too, and dressed very professionally, by the way. I, on the other hand, not so much. But yeah, you look very good in that pantsuit. It was quite good. So, yeah, it, and that, again, followed up with the Just One Job Fair at San Luis Obispo today. And, again, I will echo Mr. Buckman's comment about the kids being very articulate and poised, and they did an excellent job of interviews. I would have hired every one of them. But I was a plumbing and heating contractor today, which was fun. But I, yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, that does seem appropriate. A lot of hot air. But the thing that was fun about it was to find out in talking to these kids, many of them, probably most all of them, had some sort of job experience, and the number of kids that referred to their CTE courses, because, you know, we were talking about fabricating sheet metal and things like that. That's done quite often in heating and so forth, and air conditioning. And many of them had welding skills and had other skills. A lot of them were interested in hands-on. I think the only downside to that is, of the 9 students that came, there was not one woman in the young woman in the thing. So I don't know what to do about that, but I would urge more young women to think about some of these jobs. Also, I did attend Mrs. Negranti's Celebration of Life, and it was wonderful. It was wonderful, and I'm glad that the family consented to the students, to the staff and students at Laguna Middle School to provide that. It was a nice culmination of her years of service to the district and a nice celebration of her life. So, thank you.
Anybody else? Mr. Millar.
I just wanted to acknowledge that myself and many of us were at the Laguna Middle Schools to Watch celebration, was really wonderful and inspiring. And congratulations to Andre Elliott, Carl Bloom, and the staff and the kids. They did a fantastic, pardon me? Los Osos Middle School, my gosh, I gave, not that there's anything wrong with Lambs, but Loams, Los Osos Middle School, thank you, Marilyn. And it was a wonderful event, the kids were great, and they gave us pins.
So. Right, and I think just adding on to that, if I can say, I was talking to a teacher who said, who had been teaching there for, I guess, close to 19 years now, and her comment was, when I first got to this school, I was talking to people about making this a middle school, and they all poo-pooed it and said it'll never happen, and she said, and now look at us. So they have a lot to be proud of. I think that's it, unless you have anything else.
No, I don't, sorry.
So we will adjourn this meeting. Our next meeting will be on April 12th, the Measure D study session. Fence our regular meeting at Los Osos Middle School on the 17th. Thank you very much. No, not quite.